Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guest today is director William Kaufman, whose latest project is Daylight's End, which is a zombie apocalypse thriller action, very heavy on the action feature, which you can catch on video on demand now and will be appearing on home video in November. Welcome to the show, William.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, the trailer for this is all I've seen so far, and it looks delicious from my point of view. It looks
awesome.
I like zombie movies that have action. I like the horror thriller aspect, and I really am a junkie for action movies and for Westerns. And when I'm watching this trailer, the first thing that crosses my mind is, oh, this is Road Warrior with zombies. Cool.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely has its inspirations from those movies I came up on. So that's definitely true. So there's a little bit Mad Max, Road Warrior, and there's some I Am Legend, 28 Days Later, you know, kind of the gambit. Some John Carpenter's Precinct 13. So definitely a wide variety of genre influences.
So what was the inspiration for getting this movie made?
Well, the writer, Chad Law, had written a script for Project Greenlight and was one of the finalists in that, I think, season 3. And we've been friends for quite a while and had collaborated on projects in the past. And this was kind of the territory as a big fan of that kind of apocalyptic genre, I thought it was an opportunity to do something really cool. So he reinvented the script to kind of take advantage of the resources and locations and stuff that we had. And, you know, it became something very different, but I think he did an awesome job.
Now, how long did it take you guys to shoot this? If I'm understanding correctly, most of this, or if all of it, was shot in and around Dallas?
Yeah, a good chunk of it was shot in Dallas, probably about 4 weeks. And then we shot in two other smaller, towns outside, Tyler and Mineral Wells. They made up kind of some of our signature locations. And then we filmed a little bit out in West Texas, right on the New Mexican border. That's where the film begins.
For you, as the director, what was the most challenging aspect of getting the story told the way you wanted to tell it?
I think the most challenging part was that, we were trying to do a story that was way beyond what something like, our budget would typically allow. And so, wanting to do something that was really grounded in reality and gritty, and production design was so critical. And we, working with a large ensemble cast was definitely a new experience for me, and it was pretty challenging, especially on a budget. So I think that, battling the heat of Texas, July, August, is all kind of the typical brutal indie filmmaker challenges.
Well, as someone who lives in the Phoenix area, I feel you with the heat.
Yeah.
Now, you've got Lance Henriksen in this. How was he to direct? Because he just seems like very intense, but also a lot of fun at the same time.
I mean, Lance is awesome. He's as, I like to say, as good as it gets. He shows up as hungry for your film and as collaborative and, supportive to a director as anyone could hope for. It's really exciting to get to work with someone who has been in the business. I mean, he goes back, a long time. I mean, Close Encounters, Dog Day Afternoon, and through all these signature kind of genre films like Terminator and Aliens and so forth. So he's worked with a lot of, legendary directors, and I think getting to work with him and have him be so supportive of what we were trying to do was just a real treat for me. I felt very blessed.
Now, are there any any changes to the story that you had to make while you were filming just to accommodate time and budget? Anything that you had to leave out that you wish you could get in there on the DVD later for people?
No, I mean, the film was pretty tight. I mean, there's a couple things on the script level that, it may sound crazy to say, there was another action set piece that did get, you know, reined way back. And then there was one other scene leading up to the arrival at the, you know, the precinct, the police station where our survivors are hiding out, that got omitted, that I was really kind of in love with, but just budget didn't permit it. And ultimately running time and pacing, it was a smarter play that it went the way it did.
Now, I've seen a lot of comments and reviews on this. Everybody loves the action that's in there, the way it's paced, even the way it's shot, especially for the budget that you had. If you were to give a couple of tips to some up-and-coming directing upstart, what direction, what gentle guidance would you give them?
I mean, the best direction I would give is get out and shoot as much as you can. And in today's day and age, where you can go buy a 5D and Premiere and go make your own movies, for under 10 grand, I think that's what I would do, is get out there and work. And probably more importantly, that for me is just surrounding yourself with really smart, talented people that you can lean on, people that are better than you at different things. And cast is everything, especially when you're on a time frame and a budget and everything, is to try and do as great a casting, performance and personality wise that can all kind of collaborate and work in that kind of pressure cooker. Again, I would say work with people that you can learn from.
That's always key, because learning as you go, learning from people who've been there before you, is the immersive type of learning. It's better than anything you can get in the book. Until you do it yourself and make a couple of mistakes and figure out, oh, this is how I'm supposed to do it, not that way, that's the only way you really get better, right?
Yeah, and I mean, to that point, I learned more in my first feature film than I did, I would say, easily, in that first feature film than I did in the entire time I was at film school. So I think that, and that the only reason that happened was, is just teaming up with a bunch of really smart people who'd already done it and could point us in the right direction and, kind of mentor us.
Now, do film schools these days actually have what you call the equivalent of a field practicum, where at the end of the semester or at the end of the year, you actually go out and try to apply what you've learned and see what works for you and what doesn't?
I mean, most real programs will have several levels, anywhere between 2 and 3 production level courses. And then in addition, there's things like they call special problems, where you're actually making, either a series of short films or one big film. The disadvantage, obviously, is that, there's only so many times for different people to get an opportunity to direct. So that's why I think it's so key to take what you learn and go do it independently. I did pretty much everything I did, the stuff that, I wouldn't hide, I did outside of film school. So I think that's the key thing, is just to get practical knowledge and make sure you don't graduate from a film program without having worked in the business and have set etiquette and know what's going on before you try and strike out completely on your own.
Awesome. Now, have you taken this film out around to festivals, or is this literally a project from conception to filming to distribution?
Well, I think our intention was, was simply to make the film and deliver the film and get it out there. But as we got further along and we got into post, we got some response from, the Comic-Con type festivals, Comic-Palooza out of Houston, Dallas Comic Con, and some of these other genre festivals. And it seemed like a perfect opportunity to get the film out there and have people kind of spread the word of mouth, because on a film our size, there is no marketing budget. Mm-hmm. It's really what we can do for the film ourselves.
Cool. Now, where can people check out this movie now? Because like I said, the trailer looks really, really, it's my wheelhouse. And I want to make sure other people go check it out too.
Well, I think you, I mean any of the VOD markets, the, you know, there's like 40 different platforms. So DirecTV, iTunes, I push people to iTunes, Amazon, all the VOD markets. You should be able to just do a search or find it in the recently released, you know, horror action and somewhere in that vein. But just searching Daylight's End, it'll pop up.
Cool. Now, are you just pushing Daylight's End, or have you started working on your next project already?
Yeah, I'm always working on the next project, but yes, so I'm definitely pushing to get this movie out there and get his get the audience that, you know, we feel the film deserves, and people seem to have responded really well to it, so it's just wanting to share it and get it out there. As for the next project, you know, there's a couple things that I'm fighting to make real, but you know, nothing's real until you're actually there, so I kind of hesitate to talk about them because you never know when they'll go.
Right. So, what do you personally look for in a project? What is that key that says, "Ooh, this is the one I have to make"?
You know, I think it's that's kind of a hard question to pin down. I think for me, it's finding, you know. You mentioned that like this film was a definitely shows its influences. You know, it's this meets that, and I think, but it's whether you know my buddy Chad said, it's not so much about reinventing the wheel, but making sure the wheel spins really well. And I
Okay.
think that's the thing is to find a story that I think I can do my own take on, and wherever I can get, you know, I'm really looking for stuff that I think has you know, a really good, strong character story to tell. And if I can hide that in a great genre piece, all the better, you know?
Yeah. I'm a big fan of story. Even stories where some of the characters don't quite hit the mark 100%, if the story they're telling, if the journey they're on is compelling, that more than makes up for it. And
Well,
in low budget films, I realize you might have to make a few sacrifices here and there, but as long as the story is good, I will push a small film, even more than some of the big ones that have been coming out lately.
yeah. And one of the nice things about doing something independent is you get to include things that I just, you know, if I'm working for the studios on a home video title, there's just things I can do in the independent world. I can think of three or four scenes from the movie that I just wouldn't get allowed to do. They'd say, okay, hey, we're not killing zombies right now. Why is this scene there? You know, because it's a heavy character piece. And so I really enjoyed that freedom creatively.
Okay. Yeah, it just amazes me how much when the budget is lower, you have fewer people trying to mess up your soup.
Yeah, and you just don't have to play it as safe, you know. There's kind of, you know, formulas in Hollywood, and so I think, and you know, and we all play on the formula. It's just about going, okay, well, how can I push back on that? How can I kind of twist and turn that a little bit? And I think that's really what's rewarding and fun to do.
Well, if you ever come up with an idea to get Hollywood to stop making, 75% remakes and go back to maybe 40% remakes and give us more original stories, I for one will applaud you.
Well, I think that's an uphill battle. I hear the term in Hollywood, they call it branded material. Branded means, you know, that everyone, you know, their interests are not towards original content. They really are about, they use the term branded material, which simply means sequels to tried and true products. So, yeah, so that's why, you know, there you'll see among myself, you'll among some of the cast members, you'll definitely see some gaps in working because, you know, look, I've done a sequel or two. So from franchise material. But that's nowhere near as much as I might have enjoyed working with that team and working on that film. It doesn't even come close to being as satisfying as a filmmaker to go and do your own stuff.
Yeah, the way I heard it described is they feel safer if the quote unquote property has already established a footing somewhere else, be it online or in comics or as a novel. And, you know,
or
once
a video game or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. A previous existing franchise in a different media or a property, as they call it. And then they'll feel safe about exploring whether or not to make it. I'm like, really? Seriously?
Yeah. That's very, very true.
Oh, well. But yeah. I wish you luck with Daylight's End.
Thank you.
And with your future projects. If you have any more future sci-fi or horror projects in the mix, just feel free to give me a call.
I will, definitely. There's stuff brewing. I'll let you know as things become a little more real.
Excellent, excellent.
Please check out the movie. I think you'll dig it.
Yes, the movie is Daylight's End. You can find it on Amazon, iTunes, probably Roku, definitely DirecTV, your various video on demand, whatever your favorite one is. There's, what, 200 out there now? Go check it out. And you said DVD comes out in November?
That's correct, the first week of November.
Excellent. So we'll keep an eye out on that. Make sure people know when it's available to go check it out. Thank you, William, for your time today.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
This is Kevin Murphy from Mystery Science Theater 3000 and Rift Tracks, and you have bitten off a nice big chunk of Slice of Sci-Fi.
I love finding little gems in the rough, so to speak. The surprises, the fact that some of these movies got made at all on the budgets they have, amazes and thrills me, because it's proof right there in front of us that good filmmaking can still be done, good storytelling can still be done, no matter what the budget. And someday, maybe, more people, more executives in Hollywood will kind of slowly realize that idea, because if you don't have a good story, or worse yet, if you have a good story and too many people's input during production just kind of waters it down, dilutes it, completely changes it from what it was when it was a good story, maybe the downturn in box office attendance will change. Movies used to be storytelling events, and now those storytelling events are on TV, and it's very, very hard to convince people to spend $20 or $30 at the theater when they can binge watch an entire season of a good story at home. It doesn't matter how loud they, well, it might matter how loud they play it, but usually introducing competition promotes growth and change. That's supposedly the way the free market's supposed to work, right? People see something they want, they gravitate toward it. Whatever used to be the big dog in the neighborhood is no longer the big dog in the neighborhood, and they have to adapt or starve. And I don't know, entertainment choices are about to change drastically. The big news this week, well, big to me anyway, was Google. the all-consuming, all-encompassing, see-all, know-all, be-all behemoth that is the great god Google just purchased the rights from CBS to stream their content live. So all the cord cutters who have gone to great lengths to get rid of their cable subscription and have jumped through hoops to use things like Roku or Sling now can get or will be able to in first quarter 2017 will be able to get their CBS shows like NCIS and Elementary and whatever else there is, including NFL football games, on YouTube live as it's happening. That shocked me, because Google using YouTube to get into the skinny bundle arena is a little bit terrifying, but a little bit intriguing. The devil's advocate in me goes, huh, Google is going to allow CBS Corporation to tell all of the cable companies in the country to suck it, to just go away. And it won't cost that much. It'll probably be in line with what Sling and PlayStation View are doing, $20 to $30 a month for your lowest tier. And the follow-up story on that was that they have also been negotiating with Disney, ABC, Viacom, and Fox. Now, if YouTube manages to get all of those conglomerates on their premium level subscription service, every single cable company in the country will plot and cry mama. Comcast is probably better positioned because they have absorbed the NBC Universal conglomerate. But the others, not so much. Why bother with UVerse or Xfinity or any of those video on demand services when everything is going to be on YouTube? Now, I'll be curious to see if they do the limiting thing where that episode is only available for a certain period of time, or if they'll do the 5-episode thing that Hulu does. And that is not actually even consistent. Some shows Hulu does one of, some shows Hulu does 5 of, some shows Hulu does the entire series of. And I'm going to be looking at this with great interest, because not being tied to a cable subscription is intriguing to me, but it's also how I get my internet. Now, if all of the cable companies all of a sudden just become broadband ISPs, that's going to seriously change the economic landscape of these companies. And I can't even imagine what directions this could take, but I'm looking forward to watching the shakeup, especially if Google signs a second conglomerate on before Christmas. Oh my goodness, people are going to rush out and improve their cable packages. I don't know if they'll buy like fourth generation Apple TVs and new Roku boxes and Sling boxes or what have you, but this is a liberating time in terms of content availability, but it's also a little bit scary because Google is going to have access to more content that people can't live without, and who knows what they're going to do with that information. So, yeah, I'd like to hear your comments on it. So send me an email, summer@sliceofsci-fi.com. Call in 602-635-6976. The one other thing I saw in terms of changing distribution models, Freeform, the network formerly known as ABC Family, has a new series debuting in January called Beyond, where a young man wakes up from 12 years in a coma to discover he has abilities, and he's trying to figure out what's going on. It's going to be a weekly series broadcast on Freeform, just like all of their other shows, like Shadowhunters and Stitchers. And what they're doing with Beyond, though, is different. The entire first season of Beyond will be available on Hulu. They're going to drop the entire first season on Hulu, the same way Netflix does with the Marvel shows, like Luke Cage and Jessica Jones and Daredevil. They're just going to drop the entire series right there online for people to binge watch. And I said, that's brilliant. That is actually brilliant, because I would sit there and watch like the first five or six episodes just because I could, because they're there, you know? And the fact that a company like ABC, well, Disney ABC actually, is experimenting with this with Hulu, with something other than Netflix, is very interesting. I haven't signed up for any of the Amazon series. I don't know if they do one episode at a time or drop the entire series, but the fact that Hulu now has this or will have this is very intriguing to me. So we'll see where that goes. We got an email question from Stephen in Australia asking for more TV coverage. Well, Stephen, you're in luck. We have, like I said, we switched the TV review format to five episodes in. So after the fifth episode, I should start getting reviews from the rest of the team here. So we should start getting some more TV coverage really, really soon. And the reason I did that was because sometimes that first episode doesn't quite give you a good enough feel on a show. And the five episodes in, for us anyway, has been working really well. So the reviewers are checking out the first five episodes of a show, putting a review together based on that. And occasionally we'll do a TV talk episode and talk about some of those shows. So, yeah, I know he said the new seasons of Flash, Arrow, Supergirl, and Legends of Tomorrow are being shown within hours of their appearance on US TVs, but some of the others can take many months to appear later. Yeah, so if you have any specific questions about particular shows, keep an eye out on the website. We'll be doing the five episodes in reviews starting pretty soon. And if there's a show that hasn't been covered, send me another email and we'll take a look at it. As for hating it when a series you love is canceled without giving a satisfying ending, yes, I'm kind of with you on that, Stephen. I do despise it with a passion. There are too many to name. There really are too many to name. Lots of people are still, shall we say, grumpy about Stargate Universe. I, for one, I'm still a little, shall we say, disappointed, angry, bitter about not getting a full season or two or three of Constantine. And I still am bitter about Firefly, but we won't go into that because I now have Killjoys, and That's a joy to my heart. But yeah, there are plenty of shows out there that have never been given a full shot. And there are new shows coming along that many, many people will be talking about soon. Probably right around the time as I'm putting this episode up, BBC America should be airing the first episode, the premiere episode of Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency. And yes, I'm going to be, shall we say, looking into ways to dig into some behind-the-scenes goodies for that show. Because I'm curious. Always was a Douglas Adams fan. So we'll see where this show takes us. And yes, we have lots and lots of Marvel stuff coming up later. More with Noah and Darren. And you guys will get to hear it first here. I'm going to post this over on Kick-Ass Mystic Ninjas in a little bit, but I'm 99% sure that our topic for November will be H.G. Wells' The Time Machine. So, brush up. And I'm going to try to get a date, a recording date for that, so we can ask questions. You can ask questions of us on Twitter when we talk about that. That's the plan, and as always, it's the internet, and it's podcasting. Plans go sideways at the drop of a hat, so we'll never know. So that's what we're aiming for, first week of November. H.G. Wells is The Time Machine. Next episode, Kick-Ass Mystic Ninjas. But that will do it for this episode. If you have any questions or comments, please feel free to call in 602-635-6976 or send me an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com, with a message that you've recorded yourself or just an email question like Steven did. You can listen to the show through iTunes, through Stitcher, through TuneIn, and through Krypton Radio. If you are listening on iTunes or on Stitcher, give us a review. Let other listeners know that you enjoy the show, and maybe they might too. You can check us out on Twitter, @SliceOfSciFi. You can check us out on Google Plus and on YouTube, Slice of Sci-Fi, in both of those places. And as always, the website, SliceOfSciFi.com. We also have PopCultureGeeks.com, WritersAfterDark.com, and KickAssMysticNinjas.com. I'd like to thank everybody for their pledges through Patreon. Your support does keep things going around here, and for that I am humbly grateful. The fact that you are enjoying these shows and continue to support what I'm trying to do here means a great deal to me, especially given certain real life things that are going on. Thank you. You guys are helping more, far more than you could ever realize. If you're interested in adding your own pledges to help support what we're doing here, the website is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. That's patreon/sliceofscifi. And again, thank you. I'd like to also send my thanks out to the geek rock band Sci Fried for the excellent job they did on the theme music for Slice of Sci-Fi. If you want to listen to some more stuff by them, maybe check out their albums, you can go to sci-fried.com. But that'll do it. We'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.